WZ Voices welcomes you to the Business of Bloodstock podcast with Tim Rowe and Charmaine Bukovec.
Welcome to episode 5 of the Business of Bloodstock podcast. We have two great young guests this week who the future of their respective states industries, Bart McCulloch from Grenville Stud in Tasmania and Jamie O'Bree from Ruby Racing and Breeding in Geraldton, WA. So as far away as you could get from each other nearly, but they're both going to leave their stamp on the industry and already have. I think both interviews were very insightful and very interesting. And as I said, you can definitely see that they are going to leave an impression. Charmaine, we did intend to have this podcast out earlier, but it's been a hectic schedule of sales and Asian racing conferences and here, there and everywhere. I don't know what state I'm in at the moment. Dishevelled is about the only state I know.
I feel a bit the same, Tim. I'm not quite sure where I am. I've just touched down after another flight and seeing stars. So it has been a super crazy few weeks. I hope everyone, it might have given time for people, Tim, to kind of catch up on some of our older podcasts. There's a positive out of that. But I hope everyone really enjoys this episode as much as Tim and I have enjoyed interviewing our guests. It's great to have some of the next generation on and telling us about their plans for the future. We hope you enjoy listening.
On episode 5 of the Business of Bloodstock podcast, we're grateful to have Bart McCulloch, family-run Grenville stud from Tasmania. They've just come off a very successful Tasmanian sale. I think it's top 4 lots they sold, and you know, topped it with a capitalist filly for $115,000. And we'll also touch on later their first season sire Stratosphere's flying at the moment, equal leading sire by winners. So, welcome to the show, Bart.
Thank you. Great to be here, and thanks for having me along.
No dramas at all. Bart, can we just touch on, I guess, the history of Grenville Stud? Your father's a horse trainer. I don't think he probably does a bit of everything by the look of it. He trains, he breeds, you've got cattle, you know, obviously standing stallions as well. What's the history of Grenville? Did your father, Graham, found the farm?
Yeah, so Grenville's the original property. Grenville was bought by my grandparents just before Graham was born. And they took over the family farm when Graham was 5 weeks old. So he's lived in the one house his whole life on the family farm there. It was originally just a mixed farming enterprise with no horses. Graham's had a passion for horses from when he was young and started going to shows, and soon worked out that he couldn't make a living out of horses going to show jumping. So he went to the Adelaide sales and purchased a couple of fillies and started training them, and quickly became the leading trainer in the 80s in Tassie on the back of some early success there with those couple of fillies he purchased out of the Adelaide sales.
So where did the breeding, so obviously as being the leading trainer, what led him to, I guess, pursue the breeding side of it, and I guess those couple of mares sort of started it, did they? Or
I guess he likes to be busy and keep his hand in a number of finger in a number of pies. But I guess I've never really asked that, but I think he just he's always wanted to try and experiment things, and had some mares or fillies off the track that were quite successful. So he started breeding that way, and then as that got a little bit bigger, he started to explore stallions that was of interest and he thought would be successful down here, and it just grew from there. And probably over the last 10 years or so, the breeding side has become a lot more of the focus, and then the training side is really Graham's passion and what he really, you know, enjoys doing. I guess it's his hobby as such.
Working in a family business is you know, not easy for everyone, but I've seen you at the sales on the mainland and obviously selling drafts in Tassie and Melbourne and Adelaide. You seem to have a very close relationship. How do you go working with your father?
Look, it's fantastic. I'm very lucky to have him there alongside me and his knowledge and experience. We certainly bring different strengths to the business, which we complement each other, and it's really nice to have a sounding board there with things you're unsure of, whether it be, you know, how to treat a horse that's not right, or you know, what you like about a horse, what you don't like about a horse, just a sounding board there to, I guess, discuss things with that you can trust and value their opinion. And we do have a very, very strong relationship, you know, very, very similar passions. We love the horses and the breeding, and, you know, I guess we live and breathe it. And when we've both got, you know, such similar passions, it means we're, you know, pretty close, I guess.
And Bart, you have, away from Grenville Stud, you have quite an impressive resume. I can see a little bit of memorabilia on the wall behind us. Obviously, people won't see this video side of the podcast. Tell us a little bit about your background away from the industry.
So I'm a little bit of a washed up old footballer now, but I think my football career has finally come to an end. Certainly my wife would like it to be the case. I don't think I'm going to go around again this year. But when I was 18, I got drafted to the Brisbane Lions and out of Tasmania. So straight out of school, went up there for 3 years on Brisbane Lions list. Wasn't a very successful time up there. Had a lot of injuries and certainly don't feel I played my best football up there. But it was a wonderful experience since returning to Tassie from that time in Brisbane, continued to play football down here up until last season.
Now I see quite a professional outlook that you run and run Grenville very professionally and commercial outlook. But did you learn a lot from a professional football side and club and the professionalism required? Did that sort of rub off on you, or already had that?
Look, I guess it was probably the biggest thing up there that I learned was, you know, those that work hard and aren't potentially probably the most talented, but those that work the hardest are probably the most successful and the best footballers, because they, you know, they've got that determination and ensure that they prepare the best they can, and that shows through in their performances. So I guess that's something in life that is pretty important, to prepare well and just make sure that you are hard working and leave no stone unturned, whether that be in, you know, preparation for you know, these footballers getting ready for a game, or whether you're, you know, preparing, you know, yearlings for sale or race horses to race. I guess is just leaving no stone unturned, and those that do put in the you know, the harder the work you work, the luckier you get. So that was probably a big thing there. And look, I guess a few couple of people that you know, I have a lot of respect for up there. You know, I was just there how down to earth they were, and you know, how they treated, you know, a young 18-year-old coming into the system there. And I guess just, the way they treated you really resonates with me. A couple that come to mind there, you know, being Simon Black and Luke Power, wonderful people. And, that resonates with me to, you know, doesn't matter who you are, treat everyone, you know, with respect and make them feel welcome. And that's what they certainly did for me, and that's always stuck with me.
That's definitely some very good good life lessons there, Bart. It's like you said, those points are invaluable. And as well as Grenville Stud, you work for the ANZ, not ANZ Bloodstock News, but the bank ANZ, in case anyone's wondering, as an agribusiness
more profitable,
manager.
For sure.
Yeah. Tim and I are wondering if we could just maybe change over the pay system and just head to ANZ if you have any openings, Bart. But you're an agribusiness manager there. Tell us about that role and how that complements, obviously, your work at Grenville.
Yeah, look, it's sometimes it's a little fair bit to juggle, especially, you know, through breeding season and also through the sales season. Fortunately, I've got really good bosses and a flexible work balance where I'm able to do a lot of work from home to fitting with the farm and the horses. So that works really well. But certainly it's a good, it's a wonderful job. I'm dealing with a lot of people in the agribusiness sector here in Tasmania, a lot of the operators, and, you know, they're really good people to deal with, the clients that we look after. You know, but they're also some, a lot of the top farm gate operators in Tasmania as well. So for me, you know, I'm learning every day, going out and dealing with these people and hearing what they're doing and the development they're doing and their plans. And yeah, it's wonderful. I really enjoy working with these people and you know, supporting them in what they're doing. So it really, I certainly enjoy the farm, but I also enjoy the balance that I get having that little bit of time away from the farm as well. And I'm, as I said, very fortunate that I'm able to manage them both.
But as you sort of touched on earlier, you know, maybe your father was already heading down this path, but certainly since I've got to know you and your father, that you've really taken a commercial approach. Tassie is sort of, you know, isolated to a degree, but you've gone to the sales, sourced mares in foal, and you know, sent mares to the hunter in Victoria, and you've had, you know, some big results. The biggest one that I certainly know of was the Premier sale a couple of years ago. You sold a deep field colt for $550,000 to Hong Kong Jockey Club, and you bought that mare in foal for $40,000, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, that was a day to remember, that's for sure. And I think probably be some time before we can replicate that one again. But certainly, extremely memorable. And anyone in the horse game knows how hard it is and the work you put in behind the scenes to have those horses spot on sale day. There's so many little things that can pop up and trip you up along the way, and that was just you know, a reward there that we'll cherish for a long time. But look, we probably saw, well, we were struggling probably 18 years ago, really struggling. We had a quite uncommercial broodmare band, you know, the results, it was obviously in the sale ring, were quite challenging, and it was probably taken quite a while to get out of that position. It's just a slow burn of investing in mares slowly and upgrading them. It doesn't happen overnight, obviously, particularly in the current market where, you know, quality mares demand a real premium. So we've just continued to upgrade each year, try and drop three or four off the bottom, put three or four on the top, and really fairly happy with where we're sitting around that sort of 30-35 number of broodmares, but just always trying to upgrade. As I said, the last couple of years it's been a little bit more challenging to upgrade, but we've tried to find value where we can. And yeah, look, it's paid dividends. We're obviously starting to see some good results in the sales ring, and what we're sort of also seeing is buying nice mares with pregnancies, but then putting them to our stallions and leaving really good types and getting really great results with those as well. So just buying mares, you know, that are leaving and are leaving nice types, and it's really nice to have our stallions sought after by not only local buyers but also interstate buyers, and they're certainly really strong on the Stratosphere progeny on Monday, which was very encouraging.
Another one you did sell last year, I remember you made it all, you know, took a filly by Exceed and Excel, you bred all the way up to the Gold Coast, took one horse, and you had obviously had a big opinion of it, and she brought $240,000, so it's not a small amount of money, but you did hold her in high regard, and I think you might have been a touch disappointed at the time, but that filly's really gone on and probably, do you feel vindicated what she's done on the track? That's Excel Dior, twice stakes placed this season as a two-year-old, living up to your lofty opinion.
Yeah, she was always a classy filly that we really loved. Magic Millions shared the same opinion as us and really encouraged us to go up to the Gold Coast in January. And in hindsight, as you said, probably didn't get the result we were hoping for, but we got her into a really good stable. She was purchased by Michael Costa. Obviously, he then relocated, so went to Annabelle Neesham. So she's got a really good opportunity. The first foal of the mare, we bought the mare in foal, as you mentioned, a Pierre Omer in foal to exceed and excel, and now that first foal's, as you said, stakes play. So really great outcome. And, you know, a young man now that that's done the job already at stud. So she's got a... So you think that we're taking the Melbourne Premier next week. So really looking forward to offering that and looking forward to seeing what she produces over the years to come, because she is a lovely mare. And again, we bought the mare based on the fact that she was in foal to exceed and excel, but also based on the fact that she was a lovely individual and confident she's going to keep throwing nice foals.
But you, in addition to the many hats that you already wear, you're also a director of Thoroughbred Breeders Australia. In your opinion, where do you see the Tasmanian breeding industry, say, in the next 5 to 10 years?
It's something we're working on really hard as a group at TAS Breeders to ensure that it's still viable for these smaller breeders. What we're seeing is the bigger studs down here in particular are getting probably larger, and then those smaller breeders, there's fewer and fewer of those. So we've got to work really hard to ensure that they're getting, you know, results, whether that be in the sales ring or on the racetrack. Because if we don't have, you know, breeders, we're not going to have any industry at all. You know, there won't be stallions, and then the industry will continue to decline further. So I guess that's a little bit of a concern for us, that there are fewer and fewer breeders. We've certainly seen the emergence of some over the last 2 or 3 years, somewhat on the back of, I guess, you know, a strong, buoyant yearling market. People have seen it being attractive again, which is great. But it continue to encourage these people to come into the industry. And I guess also to the emergence of the digital market now, being able to jump on easily and buy a weanling or buy a mare in foal has made it a little bit more easier for people to enter the breeding game again. It's certainly something we're working on, is trying to encourage more people to, I guess, start into the game, but also remain in the industry. And the results at the sale yesterday, there's some great results achieved there, and hopefully that's enough for them to continue to invest. And I guess we'd really just like to see these breeders. As I said, it is challenging to really upgrade mares at the moment in the current market, but we'd like to see breeders continuing just to take small steps and continuing to invest, get rid of their older mares and getting something off the track or a younger mare, because I guess that was our approach here in Tassie this year. We kept a couple of our better yearlings back here in Tassie that we could have taken to other sales on the mainland, because we wanted to continue to grow the sale and attract mainland buyers. And if we don't have an attractive catalogue with a diverse range of stallions, mainlanders are just not going to come, and we're so reliant on them coming for the success of our sale.
It's quite a... obviously, you know, you could have targeted some of those bigger sales on the mainland, but obviously you've made a strategic decision to benefit the entire state as opposed to just your own farm and commercial interests. So I think, you know, all the breeders down there really need to be commended on that. And there are some great minds under 40, obviously, Dave, yourself, down in Taz. So, that's a very strategic targeted approach. And I think I know Tim was down there and can talk to it, but I know a lot of trainers do love that Tasmanian sale.
Yeah, absolutely. Magic Millions did a wonderful job on getting a lot of mainlanders down. And as I said, it can be challenging. We're obviously seeing being a little bit harder to potentially move these horses on. So it would have been quite easy for a lot of buyers to just say, look, Tassie's quite a small catalogue. We might give this one a miss. We had to get what we want in Melbourne or Adelaide or Perth. But Magic Millions worked really hard to get a buying bench down here. And look, when people come down, they often say, well, I'll certainly be back next year. They have a great time. It's a different sale. There's some new faces down here this week. Dave Mee being one that comes to mind, Chris Begg, and speaking to them, they had a great time and certainly going to come back. It's not your normal sale. We had some leaders come down to help us parade our yearlings. Flew straight down from Classic Star. Obviously, you're not going to get a newer or better laid out sales venue than Riverside Complex there at Warwick Farm. And then you're coming down to the Tasmanian sale here. And it's quite a contrast. We do our best to make it as appealing and as attractive as possible, but it's certainly a long way from the Riverside stables. But everyone has a good time. The leaders down here, the four leaders we had that came from Classic, just they enjoyed it so much more. It was just the most hectic 3 days. We had 24 yearlings in our draft. They said we'll just run off our feet, and they just said it was just that hectic, but the days went that quick and was that much fun, whereas the other sales, they're sitting around, you know, waiting for the days to pass. So it's certainly something different. We've got great, great restaurants down here in Tasmania and Launceston, and a lot of the buyers enjoy frequenting those. You know, we are only an hour's flight from Melbourne, so it is pretty easy to come across.
I think you're being a bit harsh on the facilities there, but particularly the Grenville, you have the Marquee. I know Graham spent the past 2 months manicuring his own personal lawn at the Grenville barn there, and next year it'll be a pristine, like a golf course.
Yeah, look, it's come a long way, and where we came out to this venue, Quirkers Park, it's called about 15 minutes out of Launceston. And we came out here 2 years ago, and look, it works really well. We've got the ability to stable around 140 horses with one auditorium in the middle for selling. We're continuing to try and improve it. We've got bitumen walkways now, and as you mentioned, it was a bit of a joke at the sale, but Graham spent probably every second day out at the sales for the last 2 months watering a lawn and mowing it and putting urea on it, and it came out really well. Everyone did comment on it, and it made it a really good backdrop there, and was a great spot to parade the yearlings, so it was certainly worth the effort.
And just on, obviously, probably a little bit like the New Zealand sale with Price here recently, you know, your resident size Stratosphere's made such a good start. How did you come by getting that stallion? It was owned by Newgate and China Horse Club.
Well, quite an interesting story. Obviously, the team, we've got a great relationship with the team at Newgate, Tony Williams and Bruce Slade and Henry. And we're aware that Extreme Choice wasn't covering many mares and having fertility issues. And Graham thought the stallion like that. He loved Extreme Choice, and just thought that, you know, with Newgate having other stallions on the roster, like Deep Field getting big books, that they probably might want to move him on and find another home due to the fact that he wasn't covering many mares and having the fertility issues and couldn't cope with the numbers he was covering, thought that he might not have fitted what Newgate were looking for. So he rang Bruce and, you know, just wanted to sound him out if they were, you know, looking to move him on, that we'd certainly think he could do a really good job here in Tassie and manage, you know, with a lot smaller books, wouldn't have quite as many issues with the fertility. And Bruce said that, look, it's obviously challenging at the moment with the Extreme Choice and his fertility, but we're gonna hold off for one more year and just persist for one more year and then review it. And then obviously they started, this was after he'd covered two seasons, so he didn't have anything racing at that stage. And then obviously they came out and started racing, and the rest is history. But he said, we do have another stallion that's coming off the track that had a lot of ability, and he probably wouldn't be suited in the Hunter just because he's not a stakes winner. But he had Peter Snowden had a huge opinion of him and felt he was a Group 1 horse. So we spoke to Peter Snowden from there and found a little bit more out about the horse and found out, you know, the opinion that Peter had of him and the level of I guess the quality of the horse, and from there that gave us the confidence to progress with that and purchase him.
I was only talking to a few people about Stratosphere yesterday, and they were saying, sort of recounting back to that year when he was a two-year-old and the buzz around the Magic Millions in January at the Gold Coast, though, was Snowden's have got this schnitzel colt. He's their number one seed for the slipper. So, you know, people looking for all-in markets to sort of get on this. And that was Stratosphere. And as we know, unfortunately, broke down.
Yeah, he obviously only had the one start before suffering a tendon injury He ran second in the Canterbury at his first start. He was very green and he was all over the track and really should have won quite comfortably. It was just an experience that cost him. And it was that day that obviously he just had electric speed and $925,000 yearling himself. So an exceptional type from a very fast female family. So without... I guess the only thing missing was the real racetrack performance. And if he did have that racetrack performance, you know, we wouldn't have been in a position to acquire him. So I guess we had to take the punt that he did have the ability that everyone thought he did. And because if he did, we wouldn't be able to afford him, as I said. So, look, certainly he's off to a great start. He's absolutely upgrading his mares. You know, the ones that have been winning have been out of, you know, modest mares, and certainly some of the best ones, the best mares he's had and the best types he's had haven't raced yet or are going overseas. Top price one last year was sold to Michael Clemens and Bevan Smith, and he's off to Singapore in the next couple of weeks, but isn't too far away from racing. So we're really excited about some of these, I guess, high-profile ones that commanded a lot more attention and more money at the sales, hitting the track soon, because he's as I said, he certainly made a good start off some of the lower quality mares that he did cover.
It's time to take on the business of Bloodstock Fast Five.
First answer that comes to mind when I ask you the question, and Tim may jump in, one I always love to start off with, but if you could have five people to dinner, dead or alive, other than wives and partners, because they're obviously all wives, because I don't think there's anyone, but obviously they're automatically invited, who would they be?
Gee, that's a tough one. Probably Bart Cummings. Gay Waterhouse. Just trying to think. I was struggling with that one a little bit. I guess the flavour is of my passion's racing. I'd like to get to know people that I haven't met in the industry and you know that have achieved great things and are well known for their success in the industry.
That's completely fair enough. That sounds like you would get a lot of good learnings from that dinner, in fairness to you. Could we ever see you training in the future?
No, my dad, Graham, says there's no way I'll be a trainer. I don't have enough patience. So, no, that's certainly not. I enjoy the breeding and seeing the horses go to and building relationships with the trainers and having good relationships there and seeing them have success with it. That's certainly what I enjoy doing, that the breeding side and the raising of them.
Completely fair enough. No competition there for your dad. Tell us your, I'm not going to say funniest memory, but a memory that comes to mind that's significant to you from being in the industry. It can be a story, a joke, a sale, something that really sticks out.
Look, obviously the sale we had with that Deep Field Colt to Hong Kong Jockey Club a couple of years ago, that was, really... special moment for us, but there was another moment that does stick in my mind. I was bid spotting as a teenager up on the Gold Coast at the Magic Millions, and it must have been about 2006 or 7. And I remember I took a bid on a colt at 400,000, and I hadn't been doing it very long. I was pretty young and naive, and took a bid at 400,000 and it got knocked down and the person walked out of the ring. And I remember chasing down the walkway there at Magic Millions with the bosses at the time, with David Chester, trying to find out who this person was that I thought bid on the horse at 400,000 but obviously they didn't think they did bid on it. So that caused a bit of a problem there, and I was in the bad books there from day one.
Not ideal. Did you ever find the person, or no, were they long gone?
I found the person that I thought bid on it, but they were adamant that they didn't. So I think the horse had to be re-offered.
What can you do? Favorite holiday destination?
Not a huge amount of opportunity with a young one on the ground and at the moment to holiday, but actually enjoy getting along to the sales, to the broodmare sales, and having a look around, looking at some mares, and having a bit of time away from the farm, and just catching up with everyone. So I'd have to say, that's one thing that we do look forward to, is going to the mare sales and catching up with everyone.
They are a very good sale, in fairness, for that. And finally, we've covered a lot of ground. Tell us something that the industry wouldn't know about you generally. Could be a talent or a pastime or something like that.
There's probably a lot of people that don't realise that, I do work off-farm as well as on the farm with the horses. So that's probably the big one that we obviously touched on earlier, is that, I do work at the ANZ in the agribusiness sector there, and that takes up part of my week.
Yes, well, I didn't know that until I did research you properly before this interview, because you kind of always know the identities of the industry, but you don't necessarily go and Google them. So Google revealed a bit there, Bart. But yes. Perfect. Tim, anything else from you?
No, I'd like to thanks for Bart coming on. I think yourself and, Dave Wishaw at Armidale Stud are probably the leaders in the future of the Tassie industry for the next couple of decades at least, hopefully. And certainly having been there at the Tassie sale the past 2 years, making giant strides. And I think, the future's looking positive with a bit of investment from obviously the farms and hopefully government. And I know Magic Millions are committed to the Tassie sale. So, every jurisdiction needs to thrive, and I'm sure Tassie will in the future.
Thanks, Tim. And look, great to have you down this week in Tassie, and appreciate your extensive coverage of the sale. I think that's something that obviously we are continuing to grow our profile down here in Tassie. Certainly, if you went back a decade, there was, very few mainland buyers coming to the Tassie sale, let alone media and the like. So it's wonderful to have that exposure continuing to increase, and that's something we want to obviously continue to grow. And as we continue to invest in mares and become more and more commercial, that will hopefully continue to come through.
I think Tassie is one of Tim's favourite sales, Bart, so I don't think, I think you'll be seeing him there more often.
That's good to hear.
Bart, thank you so much for your time. Have a lovely evening, and we will speak to you soon.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for having me. Thank you.
A share in success, shining a spotlight on ownership success stories.
On this week's episode of the Business of Bloodstock podcast, we're proud to have Jamie O'Bree from Ruby Racing and Breeding in Western Australia for our Share and Success segment, proudly sponsored by Avesta Bloodstock. Thanks for joining us, Jamie.
Yeah, thanks, guys, for having me. It's I haven't been on podcast much, so bear with me.
We're still learning too, so don't worry. But people tell us they do listen, so, and I'm sure you've got an interesting story to tell.
Yes, hopefully.
Well, you go, Tim.
We've just come off the Perth sale, which, that's your grand final, so to speak. We will touch on that and some of your back. But can you just tell us a bit about your background, first of all, I guess? You have worked in the WA industry for a fair while.
Yeah, I mean, it's all kind of started with a family of, I think it goes back four generations of racehorses on both sides. And they were kind of racing to... Yeah, they were just racing, and then my parents ended up breeding to race, and my brother and I kind of took it a little bit deeper when I started working for Scenic Lodge in WA for a few years, ending up stud manager, and ended up travelling over east and going to England for a little bit for preparations, and my brother was studying form and breeding and bloodlines, and we just kind of came together when we got a golden mare, I guess you could say, and she kind of started off everything for us, and we got recognized, and I guess Tiger and Malay kind of went through the Easter sale and we kept a share, and he ran on obviously pretty well, winning in group two and placed group one and ended up standing at Newgate. So it's I mean, that's a very brief overlook of it, but we just kind of as a family kind of come together and put our passion and interests all into one and having a go, I guess, in WA.
And Jamie, a lot of people would go their entire lives hoping for the success of having a horse like Tiger of Malay. Tell us, how did that meeting come about? And yeah, it must have been so special for you seeing that success on the track.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of blew our expectations out of the water, I guess you could say. I mean, as you've raced a few horses, you kind of know that it can be quite hard at times, and you know, that one horse, even in a country meeting, keeps your passion going, that wins a couple of races. But for Tiger to do what he did for us is can be quite emotional for us sometimes, because it's kind of a start of something that we never knew was possible for our end. And we ended up getting the mare and was able to get her in foal and send her east. And when Samizdat came out and won the three-year-old Magic Millions, we were kind of looking at a similar cross to that Not a Single Doubt line. Dan follows the East Coast like form quite closely. So he was watching Extreme Choice kind of winning that Blue Diamond, and his time stats and everything like that was really kind of coming together, and the build he was for the mare was perfect. So it just kind of all came into line when we went to Extreme Choice. But I mean, after that, what Tiger did himself was, I guess, you know, every bit of him, as well as the mare and the stallion. He we were for the group two, it wasn't really planned. We went to the National Magic Million sale to buy a mare, and the whole Magic's crew and WA team went to Brisbane to watch him race, or just be there for the races in general, because it's a bit of a good day out. And it wasn't really lined up that we were planning on going or anything. And just, it was great to have when he won. It was just something else to have, you know, good WA crew around you and I guess a bit of a celebration. But yeah, never expected any of it to happen. And then to go on and stand at stud and have really good numbers is just, yeah, can't really explain it too much.
On Tiger of Malay's Dam Sambar, according to the stud book, bred by, you know, a Western Australian, I guess, industry sort of legend, Peter Walsh, who I've got to chat to the last few months, and fascinating person, highly successful. How did a mare like her end up in your possession?
Sambar, I think they were just doing a bit of a clear out, and she was one of them on the list. And we ended up getting, before Sambar, we had her first foal, Sambade, and we put her into work, and her natural ability to eat and just work and just eat and work, and nothing fazed her. We were like, you know, this is pretty impressive. And then the mare came up for sale as a clear out option. And yeah, my parents couldn't help themselves. I mean, I would like to claim that, but it was definitely my parents that took that win. So we took it in. And Samovar, I think, came out like 3 months later and won the champion fillies over here. So, you know, that just started all a bit of an excitement, and it just kind of went from there.
At this last week's Perth sale, you also had a bit of luck there, I guess, with you went and pin-hooked a Tussaud colt from Kingstar Farm, $12,000, and a week before the sale, the half-sister Wallumbye comes and wins a group three in Melbourne.
Yeah, I mean, we pin-hooked, we didn't pin-hook it specifically, but clients tell of ours, so adding it to the draft was, you know, something else. But to be able to have that turnaround of a, you know, a small price for a wiener and turn it around for what it became was just incredible. Obviously, we, you know, we've had a little bit of luck with pin hooking. Our last pin hook was Bustler. So he turned around, not only did he turn around money for us in the short term, but he's obviously done well on the track and is quite a hopeful going forward. So it was a huge effort by the clientele that pin hooked that stout and that Tessort, and it just made a huge attraction to the draft. So it was a great result for them, and they were very stoked by the end of it. So I think it was all winning on all ends.
How do you put a value on a horse like that where you've got a massive pedigree upgrade? Look, obviously, I know he was passed in, but you got a deal done at 70,000, which is a good effort. What were you telling the clients, you know, how to play this?
Well, I don't really need it, I guess, with the clients. It was they're genuine sellers. It's quite a straightforward option of, you know, you put them in the sale to sell them. So, you know, we're pretty proud to say our draft is a genuine sale, and the clientele were just happy to have, you know, a bit of a great turnaround to be able to have profit back. Pin hooking's not easy, so it's to have that upgrade in a short period of time was very impressive on their end. So
Jamie, just talking a little bit about the sale, it was obviously extraordinary this year. The Perth industry really seems to be booming. What do you think is causing that?
I think a large part of it is the West Speed bonuses, West Speed Platinum and West Speed bonuses. It's one of the best schemes in the country, and we're getting comments now from the eastern states that are saying, you know, they're going to buy a West Speed horse or a West Speed Platinum horse and actually end up leaving it in WA. So just because the bonus schemes are so large, it's, you know, you're almost doubling your money when you're racing them in WA for the scheme it is. And WA itself, as breeders, are lifting the game as well. We're getting a lot more quality horses coming through, and each to their own. Like, every draft is having some top ends, and it's a great result for us, you know, us small breeders to be able to turn something into, you know, an incredible result at the end.
That, Jamie, that seems to be leading to sort of a fair bit of reinvestment from the WA breeders. Some of them told me there that, you know, mare numbers were sort of going down worryingly, and now there's an extra 250 to 300 mares come to the state in the last few years, which is encouraging.
Yes, I mean, there's a lot more faith going into the WA industry, and I guess that's also the faith that the trainers have and their small syndications, and they're getting more owners involved, and it's becoming a very easy scheme to be able to pitch to newcomers into the industry, and that gives breeders faith to be able to go over east and buy a mare and upgrade their stock. Or you know, there's new stallions coming into WA, which is a huge win as well, to upgrade bloodlines. And there's so much going forward and so much promise with the breeders that are currently in WA that I think we're going to end up in a very good place.
And Jamie, you touched a little bit on there about breeders going east. What impact do you think that has on a breeder's decision when mating a mare? Because obviously there is a far distance, or are Western Australians just used to it?
I think it's a little bit of both. West Australians are getting used to it, but also when we have results we do in WA with, like, even a slight listed race or a group three or anything like that, and then the West Speed kind of comes into it again, where racehorses are winning, you know, they might be winning $80,000 worth of actual prize money, but they're doubling that in West Speed bonuses, and their performance looks quite impressive, and that, you know, everything kind of starts upgrading from there. So it's a small thing to put in place to be able to push forward, but WA has definitely lifted the bar in the sense of the breeding scheme, because we can send them east and get west speed with the Eastern State Stallions and still turn around for good money when we're breeding to sell in Perth sales. So,
and Jamie, to your point earlier, I think I had a little bit of a dinner party at my place on Sunday night with some industry friends, and West Speed actually came up, funnily enough, of all things. But that conversation about, you know, you can still, you know, basically support the West Speed program and get all these amazing benefits. And I think, you know, it's those conversations around dinner tables or at the sales and things like that, and people are going, oh, wow, and obviously reaping those rewards. And I think, you know, all those bonus incentive schemes prop up the breeding industries through new owners.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that's quite easy to sell to someone. It's you know, when you've been involved in racehorses for a while and you go into, you know, even the small meetings, it's still adding to it. It's an incredible scheme. It's something that should be, you know, touched on every time. Rawa has done a huge job to be able to put this in place and be able to get the WA booming. It's been incredible on all parts.
And just touching on Rawa there, I am going to give them a little bit of a shout out, and in conjunction with Racing Connections, because the Sunday before the sale, they had 160 owners out there as part of their Own the Dream, competition or activation, as you know, Mark would speak. To have 160 people at a workshop from someone who has done these workshops myself in previous roles is an amazing feat to have. So, you know, all those little things along the way, and obviously that was in conjunction with Racing Connections too, but that's what gets people involved and interested and wanting to buy. So a massive shout out to Rawa for doing some great work there with Racing Connections.
Yeah, I mean, Own the Dream is, you know, it's grown from something that's, you know, quite small, and we're kind of putting just the word out about how easy it can be to get involved, and this is where you start, and you know, you don't have to be shy about it. There's people there to help through the process. So it's just grew dramatically in the past few years, and they've done it so well, they've marketed it so well, and they've been able to drag in so much more fresh blood. And it's, you know, this is how the industry is booming. It's just a lot of support from all directions.
And Jamie, you know, from your Geraldton farm there, what's next for Ruby Racing and Breeding? And your brother Dan obviously is integral to the whole operation.
I mean, I haven't had time to sit down and think about it after the sales, but I think going forward, we've got, you know, everyone has a bit of a five-year plan. We've got a bit of an idea. We'd love to be able to build a bit of a quality broodmare band and have, you know, a small draft to go to the sales for ourselves, as well as a few clientele. And we've recently also bought into Lightsaber, who's standing in WA at Darling View this year as well. So everything, you know, we'll take little steps forward and take big steps as well and kind of assess where we go. And I think we're pretty excited for the Tiger and Malays to hit the ground and see where we end up there. But I think he's definitely going to suit the WA market pretty strongly. And, yeah, I mean, you know, as a business starting out, you kind of got to figure out your way. And I think when I started doing this, I didn't think this is where we were going to end up. And I think maybe I might say that in another 2 years, that I couldn't imagine where we were before. So yeah, really hopeful for the next few years.
I'm sure there'll be another segment in you for sure. We ought to get you back on for sharing success. You know, little Tiger Malay comes out and sells plenty of money and wins a Karakata plate.
Oh, that would be really lovely. I would love to put that in my dream. But yeah, I mean, in Tigers had huge support at stud, and you know, we got a bit of expectations for him, and I think, you know, his bloodline definitely will suit well to WA and East Coast, and I think we're taking the right steps forward. So
Well, Jamie, I think there's some pretty exciting times ahead for you, and we'll probably hear you cheering all the way from WA if if that happens. It won't be a dream, it'll be a reality.
It's time to take on the Business of Bloodstock Fast Five.
Jamie, every week Tim and I like to play a little game called Fast Five. We don't let you get away all that easy. So it is the first thing that comes to your mind, good, bad or ugly, generally good. but five people, if you could have them over for dinner, partners are already automatically included or family members. Five people dead or alive, who would they be for dinner?
Oh, geez. All right. I'll start with, I think the first one that kind of comes to mind, and we've dealt with him a little bit as well, is Henry Field. I think he intrigues me on the way he thinks and processes, and how he's been able to establish Newgate has been a huge, like, impressive achievement. So he's probably one. God, I haven't really thought about many others.
Three.
Yeah, maybe three. One's Henry. Two would be James Cummings. I think I would just like to understand how he kind of processes. I mean, it's large numbers, and he's able to give every little detail to each horse, so that would be really interesting. And I don't think I could go past probably Willie Pike. He's pretty talented on the WA. I'll keep it WA based. So.
I was going to say, there has to be someone WA's in there. That's pretty fair. Favourite holiday destination when you're not at the farm?
Oh, does that have to be the one that I've been to, or can I choose?
Your dream destination when...
Oh. Yeah. I think Kauai. It's an island off Hawaii.
Oh, okay.
It's like an adventure kind of island, and I've researched it a fair bit. It's definitely... I would like some adrenaline rushes, so.
I might be researching that after. I'm desperate for a holiday. What is another good one? Tim, have you got any in particular? Otherwise, I've probably got maybe one or two.
What's your go-to favourite meal?
Bolognese.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty good with a glass of red wine, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I mean, the red wine goes in the bolognese, but.
Yeah. The bolognese, some in the glass, Jamie. Come on.
A little bit of both.
Yeah. If you weren't an amazing horsewoman, what would your career be?
Oh, I think I'd still be involved with animals. There's two options. I would be keen going down the medical line of, like, veterinary, or... I would definitely be traveling and bartending.
Okay. Yeah, I think both of those options are great.